I'm Levy Dalton, and this is I'll Drink to That, a bi-weekly program where we get behind the scenes in the wine business. Hey, gang, you know our little show here today is sponsored by 750, a service for buyers in New York and New Jersey looking to buy wine, spirits, beer at the wholesale level. But we thought we'd get a few more perspectives in on what's so neat about 750. Today, Aaron Von Rock from Lincoln Restaurant.
Thanks, Levy. I think we've discovered we've used 750.com nearly every day now just to keep tabs on some of our favorite wines. After tasting thousands of wines a year, it's great to know where just in the map all the wines fit. And with all the distributors they're now working with, they're working with nearly all of our favorites. So we find tapping into them every day keeps us in touch with the big picture.
A wine buyer testimonial for 750.com. Thanks, Aaron Von Rock.
Cheers.
You may have heard of Arpe Pei, the Lombardia producer of excellent wines from the Valtellina, but you may not have heard of Isabella Pellizzati Perugo, who will be on the show today to tell us about her family estate.
Hello, Levin. Lovely to be here. It's a big pleasure for us.
Great to have you.
Thank you so much.
So you're at Arpe Pei, and you make red wine from the Valtellina. And I wonder if you could sort of sketch the history of the family and the winemaking in the family, because I know there used to be a different winery name. And what's going on? How did that all play out?
Yeah, the family history in wine business is very long. We are now the fifth generation, together with my brothers Emanuele and Guido, and the family began in 1860s, and actually the company was founded by our great-great-grandfather, Giovanni, but then the name of it was done by the great-grandfather, Arturo Pellizzati.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there was an Arturo Pellizzati winery.
Exactly. And then together with his son, Guido, and the grandson, Arturo, my father.
So there was two Arturos then.
Exactly. So they were proceeding. And until the 70s, the 73, unfortunately, our grandfather got ill of a cancer, and since our father was only child working with him, they had to decide that the only solution in order to divide was actually to sell.
I see.
So they sold the company with the brand.
They sold Arturo Pellizzati.
Yes, but they didn't sell the vineyards. Vineyards were actually divided into the family.
I see.
And it was thanks to this that our father, a few years later, decided to start again with his own vineyards only that haven't been sold, thankfully. So he started in a different dimension. Of course, we were much bigger in the past. We were only more than 50 hectares, while when he started again, it was only 10 hectares. So he was also able to buy again his part of the cellar that was not destroyed by the people who were botting.
I see. Because there had been cellar space built in Grumello in the hill.
Yeah, we were based at the base of Grumello. And the cellar that is still existing, the one we own now, is just digging to the mountain and the base of Grumello, and which is a perfect condition because it's a perfect temperature and perfect humidity as well. And into the mountain, so it's a zero impact in terms of architectural impact.
So Guido built that facility, and then his son Arturo kind of revitalized it.
Actually, yeah, Guido and Arturo, they were working and creating this together. There was a biggest part outside that is not existing anymore, but what was left was the inner part into the mountain, and we are using there again, so it's still in the good shape and...
So maybe we could speak a little bit about the wines you make under the Arpe Pei label, which was the winery that your father then restarted after Pellizzati was sold. It seems that they're all red. Is that true? Do you make any white wine?
We don't make any white wine. It's all Nebbiolo grape variety that we locally call Chiavenasca, from the dialect name Chuvinasca, which means more adapt to be transformed into wine in a dialect word. And under the brand Arpe Pei that our father had to create in order to be apart from the old ones.
Because he couldn't call it Pellizzati
anymore. No, not anymore.
Because they had sold the name.
Yeah.
So Arpe Pei, it's actually for...
Arturo Pellizzati Perego. And so just the acronymous in order to be using his own name in a different way.
So that's why the periods are in between the yeah. R Pei Pei, because yeah. it's abbreviated for yeah. his name. And when did that restart?
It did restart with the harvest 84. So temporary, the vineyards had to be rented for 10 years minimum. So he was working for a little while with the people who got our company before.
I see.
And when he managed to get the vineyards back after this, mandatory time of renting, so he got it back and started again with the vintage 84. But because he didn't really want to make a very long-aging wine like he was doing with his father and grandfather, he really didn't go outside into the market up to the beginning of 90s. So basically, we've been away from the market a little bit more. And so that's why he had to start.
So he didn't start selling it till the 90s.
Yes. So after minimum 6 years aging. And so the first bottle of our Pepe happened to be on the market at the beginning of 90s when it was already vintage 84. And it was a Sassella Roche Rosse 84.
Wow. That must be a great wine, because it's not required by law to age it for 6 years. You could do it for two or for four for a reserva. So you guys chose to age it for longer. Is that right?
Actually, in the past, a reserva must have been at least 5 years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was the past. So that's why he started following the older procedure, the older disciplinar. And even though nowadays they change it, so now it can be called reserva after 3 years aging, we prefer to keep staying on the old ones because we really believe that Nebbiolo expresses best through long aging. So we need a lot of patience.
And the wines are 100% Nebbiolo pretty much across the board, right? You don't use
yes.
some of the other native grape varieties that are there.
No, they are 100% Nebbiolo. And we love this because I think Nebbiolo, it's really performing so well. And also,
because I think a lot of times people are like, oh, Nebbiolo, it only is grown in Piemonte, they think, or only grown well in Piemonte. But here you are in Lombardia, which is the area, the mountainous area near Switzerland that's centered around Milan as the major city. And you also make wonderful Nebbiolo. And does it feel like sometimes people just don't know about what you're doing?
Well, Valtellina has been growing again Nebbiolo since centuries,
sure.
millennia, because
the Romans.
Really. Yeah, so it's very, very long history of Valtellina producing wine. For sure, not so well known because Lombardy is more known for industrial things and less for agriculture, for sure. And so this little valley right at the border, this East-West Valley, so it's, I think, it's really a unique environment that needs to be discovered. But at the same time, it's much more little than the Langhe area, so that's why it's probably so less unknown. And at the same time, there are very interesting studies going on about the origin of Nebbiolo. And there is the CNR, so the National Research Center based in Turin, with a lot of research center and a lot of people that are working on it together with some institute in Valtellina. And apparently, from a genetical point of view, it looks like there is much more biodiversity of clones in Valtellina rather than in Piemonte, which
sure.
is so interesting because, of course, genetics is sort of telling us that Valtellina might be the origin area for the Nebbiolo and then probably moving up to the north Piemonte and then down to the Langhe. But, of course, we cannot say this yet because it's very long research and very expensive. And we still trying to see the end of this big study. But it's very interesting what's coming out. And when the researchers said this, when we were doing the Nebbiolo grapes event in Alba in 2006, when they first said this, of course, there was a bit of a shock for a lot of people, and not only journalists, but also producers. So it's interesting what's coming out. And for sure, Valtellina was much more famous also in the past. Was reaching a super famous time when during the 500 years ago, when Valtellina has been dominated by the Swiss for mm-hmm. 300 years.
Sure.
And under the time, we reached the major part of vineyards. We were having more than 5,000 hectares, more or less like the Valais is today. So basically, Valtellina was producing mostly for the North Europe, so Switzerland and German-speaking countries. And so we were much more known at that time for this reason. But then through the time and through the fact that it's all manual work, because as you can see, it's all terraced and it's all, you cannot mechanize in any way. We kept losing pieces and pieces here and there. The bush have taken over a lot. And nowadays we end up to be something like 800 hectares in total, which is very little. And we have to do all
not
the...
for you, but for the entire Valtellina.
Yes, of course. And we really need to do all our best in order to preserve all of this, to keep them for the future. And that's why also we are working in order to insert all of this into the UNESCO heritage. And
you are, okay.
We really hope to be successful in this. Of course, it's a long process. We are in the tentative list. It's a longer, process, of course. And but this could bring a lot of more future and more tourism to Valtellina and more international awareness. And people need to be proud of what they have around, because I think it's really a unique place and we need to preserve for the next generations.
So when it was... When the Swiss were utilizing it as kind of the southern part of Switzerland, where you could make warmer climate wines than they could in further north in Switzerland, did that develop a relationship where maybe a lot of the wine went to Switzerland, and that's why some of the Americans maybe know it less, because there was traditionally a long history of selling to Northern Europe, kind of like Right Bank Bordeaux, that kind of thing?
Yeah, probably was that way, because so basically we were mainly known by those northern countries, and even the rest of Italy probably at that time was not knowing so much of Valtellina at the same time. So we were all selling the most up there, and so for sure less for US, but less for the rest of the countries. But then just in the 70s already, and even before in the 60s, we were seeing through the old labels that we were actually already exporting to US and to Australia also, for example. It was very unique considering that there was no fax, no emails, nothing like that. So I can imagine how it's been difficult, the communication at the time. But still, Valtellina, when started being a little bit more and more known, there were not so many wine region in the world around, so I think got a very good recognition at that time as well.
And maybe we could talk a little bit about the Valtellina, because you make wine from a few different areas of the Valtellina. You make Sicella, you make Grumello, you make Inferno. Could you explain a little bit about the differences between those zones inside the Valtellina?
Yeah, Valtellina, so is a long east-west valley, as we said. We have just one side, the north side facing south, that is with terraces all over.
So the vineyards face south.
Yes.
Which has got to help in a northerly mountainous high-altitude area.
Yeah, so we have all the terraces, and it's all very much geographical places. Because Sassella, for example, is just around Sondrio, watching Sondrio from...
which is a town in that area.
Yeah, it's the main town. And and we have Sassella just about in the west part of Sondrio. And we actually have there the majority of our vineyards. We have 8.5 hectares all together, which is really the most historical part of the Sassella, together with another producer. We have... sort of the monopoly of the old traditional part of Sassella. And then we have 2.5 hectares in the Grumello area, which is taking the name from the Grumello Castle that is right at the top.
Sure.
And it's just on the east part of Sondrio. And then we have 0.5 hectare in the Inferno area, which is another area just in the other municipality, which is in another Poggiordinti municipality. And it's a very, very little place. And the difference in between those zones, so of course, it's all very much geographical. So you know that up to that level, up to that little valley, up to the little river, it's going to be cold this way or not. And more or less, the altitude goes from 300 meter up to 600 meter,
which is pretty high.
Yeah. And then the type of soil is not so different in between them all. Because you have to think that the way the vineyards were done were made the terraces and then filled up with the soil from the river. So all the soil is very much sandy, fragmented rocks, and very poor in a way. But then what we see that is changing a lot is the amount of rocks here and there that can be, for normally in Sassella and Inferno, is much more rocky than in the Grumello area, for example, which is getting some wines that are a little bit more, you know, a little bit more tough maybe at the very beginning, a little bit more difficult to understand when they are young, but then they can deliver a lot of more, you know, uniqueness and very much complexity through aging. So I think it's very interesting to see all the differences in this way. And then, of course, it's all a lot of microclimate that you have here and there, because Valtellina, as we said, is a long east-west valley, but there are plenty of different other little valleys that are going north-south. So they are bringing, I mean, winds from the north and things. And so every single area has got a special microclimate, and which is making everything so unique.
So if I were to look on a shelf and want to know in my mind, what would be the difference between a wine labeled Grumello and a wine labeled Sassella or Inferno in terms of taste? What might I expect?
Yeah, I would say a Grumello is normally probably the most, as an introduction wine, I think, because Grumello is normally a little more sweet at the nose and in the mouth, can be a little bit more gentle in a way. And if you consider the same sort of aging, Grumello is going to be a little bit more immediate, probably, a little bit more easy to understand for people who are not, I mean, aware of Valtellina and Nebbiolo, non-Nebbiolo. But
so a little plusher than some.
Yeah, a little bit more, yeah, easy to understand for sure. While Sassella and Inferno, they are normally a little bit more stronger, a little bit more, complex and rich, probably a little bit more, sometimes even a little bit more close at the very beginning, can need a little bit more time to express its best in the glass. But then I believe either Sassella and Inferno can have a little bit more complexity and time to discover and come out with a little bit more time. So they seem a little bit more shy in a way, but if you let them express, then they might tell you more and more.
And Inferno, just the name of it seems to imply that it's pretty warm there. Is it hot there?
It's hot there because there are lots of rocks. Again, they are reflecting the sunshine. And so sometimes, you get the feeling of the heat in the wine itself. Sometimes you can get slightly higher concentration of alcohol, but not all the time. But it's really a warmth that you get as well in the. And sometimes you get also some balsamic notes as well.
In Inferno.
Inferno, yeah.
But maybe not in Sassella, or?
In Sassella, again, it's more. Sometimes, yeah, a little more minerality, a little more...
Kind of high-toned.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've mentioned a few times about the age. So I guess that leads me to wonder, at what age do you typically drink the wines that you make? What should I be thinking about if I have them in my own cellar? At what age should I start really opening up the wines that you make?
Well, we normally release the wine when we think they are already... in a good age, but then of course those wine can be aged much longer. And for example, the youngest wines we are selling is going to be something like 5 to 6 years aging already.
Okay.
Yeah. So
just normally.
Yeah, we really believe that we do at least for the young Sassella, Grumello, and Inferno, we do minimum 2 years in wood. Then we do at least. 1.5 year in bottle as well, and then it always spending a little while in concrete or stainless steel in between the wood and the bottle.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that. So you put it back in the...
Yeah, they are all fermented in wood in big chestnut and oak barrel.
So
of
you
50.
Use chestnut as well as oak.
Yeah, I mean we try to use chestnut as much as possible.
Why do you like it?
It's matching so well with the tannins of Nebbiolo from the mountain. We really believe it's sort of a chemistry thing, so that it's just matching perfectly and maintaining the wine very fresh and very young in a way, because sometimes too much wood, maybe too much oak, sometimes in Valtellina can be a little bit overtaking, and showing a sort of older wines rather than maintaining the freshness and keeping them alive.
I see. And when the wines go into bottle and then you release them at 6 years of age, what's the window for how, if are we talking about wines that I can drink immediately till 10 years, till 20 years? When do you tend to like the different crus at?
Well, you can enjoy immediately, but if you have a good cellar to keep them, there's no problem to keep much longer, so up to 10, 20 years or even more. And for example, the eldest bottle we've been tasting experience was it open for the 60th birthday of our father in the 2002. So it was actually from 1942.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and...
It was a Pellizzati one?
Yes, made by the father and grandfather together. And even though it wasn't a super vintage, because they always told our father, try not to be like your vintage, because it was not perfect all the time. But
that's pretty funny, actually.
But then...
People tell me that about 77, too. They're like, try not to be like your vintage.
And so, really, it was fantastic. Still so fresh, and of course...
Because that was a wartime vintage, yeah? So maybe some difficulty in terms of harvesting or...
Yeah, it was, and probably not a perfect climate conditions as well. And but it was amazingly expressive and fresh, and still so intense. So even after 60 years old, could have a future to be. I mean, unfortunately, our father decided to open them all, so we cannot see anymore. To see,
he didn't want you to know how bad his vintage was. I'm just kidding. But. I mean, I think a lot of people think, oh, Nebbiolo, so Barolo Barbaresco. How would you compare what you make if someone had not tried a Valtellina? Obviously, there are a lot of producers like Nino Negre or Rinaldi that people might know, or Conti Sertali Salis. But if somebody hasn't had your wine or one of the other Valtellina producers, what might they expect if they're used to Nebbiolo from the Lange?
I think our Monte Nebbiolo or Alpine Nebbiolo, it's really... unique in terms of profile as well. You get a very interesting profile at the nose. It's much more floral, for example. So you found really a much more complexity in the nose compared to the Nebbiolo from the Lange, which is very, complex and tough. But at the same time, at the nose, sometimes to me, it's just more... two or three blocks, let's say, and without, if I want to see like a diagram, I see like a really super diagram with a lot of notes in the nose, which make the wines to me more interesting, because it's you get more floral notes and a lot of fruit notes, but it's matching very interesting. And what I think it's making our Nebbiolo even more interesting is then the minerality that you can get through the tasting. So you really perceive, it's like a sort of syrup of rocks in a way, where you see this minerality bringing the wine so alive and so easy to match with food. Nebbiolo, it's for sure a wonderful grape, but sometimes when it's too strong and too heavy, you find it difficult to match with food. I believe Nebbiolo from Valtellina, it's a big chance in this. Because you can really match with whatever food you like. So even with fish, for example, if you taste some older vintages that are very silky as well and that can be so smooth, they are matching very well also with fish. But not only, of course, then you can enjoy with meat as traditional or with good, cheese as well. But really, you are probably more freedom. You have more freedom to experiment with our Nebbiolo, I guess.
You have a broader range of things you could do because the wines aren't quite as big, like just in terms of weight. They're a little more lifted in terms of mineral character and elegance.
That's really the point to me. And
do they age along the same lines? I mean, if I were to think Barolo vintage and Valtellina vintage opening times, would that be about the same? Or should I be thinking about something different if I'm opening up a Valtellina in terms of the maturity curve?
Actually, I would say they do age extremely well, or if not even better sometimes, but that's a challenge for you to taste as well. I mean, we've been doing in the past some interesting things with some other producer, doing sort of a vertical and horizontal tasting, choosing some very good vintages from us and from them, for example. And really, it was so amazing to see the way that you see like brothers and sisters. But in the Valtellina ones, you really were perceiving a little bit more freshness. At some point, you had the impression they were much younger at the same time. So I think that's a good challenge to challenge people who love Nebbiolo to make their own comparison at home. And because I think it really makes a lot of sense and give you a good idea of the way they behave through time.
And you make a few different bottlings from single crews. So you make a few different Sicellas, for example. What are the differences between those bottlings? Why is one different than another?
Yeah, in the best vintages, all the climate condition, it's perfect. And when you got the perfect skin, the perfect maturation, etc., the perfect thickness of the skins, we like to do very longer maceration. We can reach in wood up to 40, 50 days maceration. And at that point, it's fantastic for us to make an evidence difference in between the single cru vineyard that are then expressing at their best. So, for example, in the Sassella, we have two parts. Actually three, because there is a little bit more at the top. But we have the Vigna Regina right at the west part of the Sassella. It's more or less 1 hectare only. And then we have the Rocce Rosse more at the east part of the Sassella. It's more than 2 hectares there. And in this way, you see that the Vigna Regina is normally a little more rocky in a way, and it's getting wine that are always a little bit more, delicate and a little bit more mineral, but in a sort of subtle way, with a lot of complexity, but more delicate, I would say. While the part from the Rocce Rosse, it's normally a little bit more tough, maybe, and a little bit more masculine in a way. And you get some wine that have a little bit more powerful. So sometimes people prefer the Rocce Rosse compared to the Vigna Regina, or vice versa. That it's a matter of taste for sure, but we like to see those differences. And of course, when the vintage is extremely good, you can well appreciate the difference in between the two. Then, for example, we have that vineyard at the top that we actually use when the vintage is super good, with the quality of the grapes itself fantastic, to do a late harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, we decide to pick the grapes 1 extra month after the harvest. So if our standard harvest will be in the second part of October, the harvest of Ultimi Raggi part at 600 meter is going to be in the second part of November. And in this way, we get a wine that is slightly more rich in alcohol, in all the components, but then for sure then in alcohol as well. But it gets still a lot of minerality because we do not cut the bunches, so we let the plant working still. And
when do you pick, like November or...?
For example, the wine that we are presenting this Monday here, also in New York, at the Slow Wine event, is going to be picked on the 25th of November, for example. And it was the vintage 2005. So it's going to be an anteprima there.
And normally you might pick in October or November?
Our standard pick would be in the second part of October. So sometimes we start about the 15th, sometime at the 20th. It's really depending on the maturation, and we always try to get the perfect phenolic maturation of the grapes. And for this part, normally we do right at the, in the second part. So sometimes can be the 15th of November if it is slightly anticipated. We reach up to the beginning of December sometimes. For example, for the vintage 2002, that was fantastic in Valtellina. It was? Yeah.
Oh, maybe a good tip for those who are avoiding 02 Barolo.
Well, 2002 was extremely lucky vintage because we didn't get any hailstorm, which is, of course, the major risk for everybody, but for us as too. And we've been...
Are you kind of in a rain shadow, like with the mountains? Do they sort of block that a little bit?
Well, it's a really microclimate, so most of the time we are well sheltered by that. Sometimes, unfortunately, not. So it's really like, for example, in 2008, we were much more unlucky than the Lange area because we got a lot of hailstorm at that time. And for example, we are not going to go out with any label from 2008.
Oh, I didn't know that. You're not releasing any wine at all?
Not at all, no.
Not even Rosso da Valtellina?
Not even Rosso because it was not
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, unfortunately, working with nature, sometimes you don't get good surprises. But, well, that's part of the job anyway.
Is there an elevation difference with hail, or does it fall pretty uniformly at 300 and 600 meters? I mean, is there places it doesn't hit because it's too high or too low? Or?
Well, hail always coming as a surprise. So sometimes you get just a little part of the vineyard touch and sometimes not. And so it's really depending. It's no forecast at all. It's very hard to detect. Sometimes it's just arriving and you just get a line and then it's just moving by the wind. So it's really, you can't really foresee and say something definite about that.
Do you feel that the area has gotten warmer? A lot of times we hear about global warming in wine areas, or is it about the same as it has been in the past?
Well, sometimes it's getting a little bit warmer, but then we have some other vintages that are bringing back to more natural or more, let's say older way of working.
Yeah.
So I believe there is a slight global warming, but not too much. For example, we start again the harvest on the 21st of October. So it was really, classic time for starting. So we didn't face to anticipate like in September, things like that. So we have to be careful, of course. So we have to watch carefully what's going on. But still, we are not so worried about that.
So let me ask you about the things that you don't do, because no white wine, I suppose there's probably reasons for that. And then there's also a history in that area of doing like Sforzato, where people dry the grapes and go for kind of like an Amarone process with Nebbiolo, and you don't do that much. And then Pellizzati used to make a wine called Runche, where they blended all the local grape varieties together, all the red grape varieties, and you don't do that. So why not for those? Why do you choose the direction you do? Why no white? Why no Sforzato, or at least not often? And why no of the other grape varieties?
Yeah, well, Sforzato, of course, it's a wonderful wine and very interesting, like the Amarone. But we believe that in Sforzato you perceive a little bit more the hand touch with this technique of drying the grapes under the roof. That for sure, it makes everything more easier because, of course, you are not facing the weather conditions. And in the opposite of that, we do the late harvest, being very natural in the plant, drying the grapes directly in the most natural way. Of course, that is more risky in a way, but it's also more natural. And what we like of the late harvest compared to the Sforzato is that you get a wine that is still very much easy to drink because you maintain the minerality and the freshness. Well, with the Sforzato, you can get a wine that is going a little bit away from the terroir of Valtellina because you perceive more the techniques, etc. And you get a wine that, to us, it's a little bit too strong and too difficult to match with food. It's a wine at that point you just like to enjoy as a glass and not at the table. So what we want to try to get with the late harvest is still a wine that can be more enjoyable in the meal. And in the past, I have to say that Sforzato could have been called this way with this sort of technique. But when he got the DOCG in 2002, they had to design one single way of working. And of course, they decided the easiest one. So in the past, our Ultimi Raggi could have been called Sforzato, but now not anymore. And so we are stick to tradition in a different way. And the other type of things of blending, you mentioned this wine, Runche, that was actually like a Rosso di Valtellina, blending for the different zones. And for our Rosso di Valtellina, for example, we dedicate the lower part of our Sassen Lamelin between 300 and 400 meters, but also a little bit of our Grumello area. So we do dedicate a little bit of Sassella and Grumello as well, not of Inferno, because we have such a little part and we try to keep separate and to save it as Inferno because it's very, very little. And but at the same time, we try to get for the Rosso di Valtellina a wine that is well ready to drink, much more fruity, and to give more chance to this characteristic rather than to, yeah, the longer aging, etc. So,
does that see chestnut or no? The Rosso
Yes, it does. It does. So sometimes it's even fermented in chestnut because it's also the Rosso is fermented in wood, normally up to 4-6 days of maceration. And then it spends always sort of 6 to 9 months in big wood as well. That can be some chestnut or a little bit of oak, but always a good time in wood as well. And then at least 6 months up to 1 year in bottle as well before releasing. So even for the Rosso, we try to keep a good aging because we believe it needs a little bit more time also for the Rosso to express it best.
And is it an area in the Valtellina that's maybe just not suited to whites, or you just don't like them yourself, or why no white?
Well, Valtellina in general, it's really a red wine area. So there are some producers who are trying to do some experiments in some little parts that maybe can be a little bit more, I mean, not in the shadow, of course, but maybe in a higher way or with a little bit less exposure. And but I think mainly it's really red. I mean, there's never a big part of white wine.
The tradition is for red.
The tradition is definitely for red, yeah. Then in the future, you never know, maybe, well, a dream could be to go a little bit higher as you were to in the past, because of course in the top we have more bush taking over of the... So maybe in the future, if we really are successful and we want to try to make some experiments, probably we could try to reconquer from the bush the right at the top. Of course, it will be very difficult, and maybe we could be facing also some problems in removing the bush and things like that.
Because just in terms of labor, like getting up there because it's steep and high and hard to move.
Yeah, so we will see.
And there's another area of Valtellina called Valgella. And do you have any plans in the future to maybe make a wine from there? Or it's just you don't have the vineyards there and it doesn't make sense for you guys?
Well, we do not have any vineyards nowadays in Valgella. We had in the past when we were together with the grandfather, etc. And so for us in this moment, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go there because... Well, of course, it is a lot of labor work of what we do. You have to think that we have roughly something like 1,200 hours per hectare per year.
Really? That seems like a lot.
Yeah, which is at least 3 times what you face for the hill, and we don't think about the comparison with the flat areas. But it is a lot of work, and even moving the people from one part to the other would be a problem. So basically, if we get new vineyards... normally are just coming around our area. It might be sometimes some older people who are not able to cultivate anymore, and they ask us whether we want to take it over. And so we might say yes if they are close to us because it's just it's make it very easy to work. But to face in a new other area, it's going to be a little bit more complicated. And for sure, Valgella is a little bit more like Rumello, giving wines that are a little bit more... ready to drink and deep. And then, of course, we know some very good producer like Fai that they have the majority in Sassel, in Valgella, and where they do produce very good wines. But for us, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to move up there.
It is an area of a lot of small growers, right? I mean, 100, 150, 180 small growers, and then relatively few wine-producing firms, so maybe 20. Or so. Is that about right? Or
yeah, you have to think that, I mean, in Valtellina, the property is very much fragmented in general. So of those 800 hectares we were talking about before, about 70% is owned by people who are actually doing their own little wines for the family and selling the most to the biggest company. So a company like us or like Fai or like other small producer who are controlling all their chains, were quite unique because the biggest company have always been preferred to buy the grapes rather than cultivate their own places.
So you at Arpaypay don't really buy in grapes. You work the vineyards that you own.
Yeah.
Which has got to be, as you just mentioned, somewhat of a rarity in the region because it's not really set up that way. There's not a lot of people who own a lot of their own vines, like at a big scale.
Yeah. But of course, if you control your own vineyards and your own production, it's of course, for us, it makes more sense to work in this way. And but then, yeah, it's not common, let's say. And and because of this, we keep losing pieces and pieces because every time being private property, every time one of those old people cannot proceed anymore, it's either decide to sell the vineyards or they can abandon them and no one can say anything because there's no rule for that. That's why the point, if we were into the UNESCO, probably is not going to be only private property, it's going to be a public property in a way that you have the responsibility to keep alive what you are doing. So either you keep your own vineyards alive, either you rent it or either you sell it, but you have to keep the vineyard itself working, let's say.
So you're saying the Valtellina as a whole tends to shrink because there's such small-scale holdings and those people essentially give up and that parcel goes extinct for vines.
Yeah, there's a big risk of losing pieces and pieces here and there.
And it was at one time quite a bit bigger, like six times as big, the whole area, yeah. And now it's shrunk. Would you say that the best areas are exploited today or not? Are there great vineyard sites in the Valtellina that lay fallow?
Well, for sure. We've been able to keep the most historical part, like all the subzones. For sure, we tend to lose less of the main places. But if we look back, we see that they were reaching a little bit more higher in some areas. Or sometimes here and there you can still see the bush coming in between, and which is really making more nervous because you understand that in some areas you shouldn't be doing that because you still have a good access. Of course, if you lose the top part, it will be the most difficult to cultivate, maybe no roads, no anything. But we've been losing here and there something. So they gather another good challenge will be to recover the part that we've been losing in between. And it's great that with other sort of young producer that are just now facing that they were just making their own grapes and maybe selling to other big companies, they start now producing their own bottle, maybe like 1,000 bottle or something that probably the US market might don't know because they are very, very little. But they are very good, and I think it's a good growth, a new trend happening in Valtellina. So with new young people, like the age of my brother, that Emanuele, that there are sort of contagious things that we try to get them involved a little bit more to get their own bottles. And we hope these things are going to be more and more common in the future. Because I believe Valtellina will be more and more successful if we get a brighter class of new producer, new small young producer to proceed.
If the appellation itself had more name recognition for high quality in the market, it would be easier for you to sell your wine.
For sure. And for sure it would bring a bigger awareness of Valtellina around the world. Yeah.
And let's just talk about the physicality of what you're doing. It's terrace vineyards that are quite high. Does that mean no tractors, manual harvesting? What does that really entail?
Well, for us, it's 100% manual work. There's no possibility to enter with any physical, mechanical things like tractor or anything else. So from when you put a plant, you do manually, you dig your old, put the new plant, up to the pruning and the cutting and the fixing, everything must be done manually. And of course, the harvest, that is just the final festival, if you like, when you do manually and you have to, so you cut the bunches manually, you carry on your shoulder the grapes to bring them back to the bottom. When we are lucky, in some areas, we have some teleferique that are supporting us, bringing the grapes up or bringing the grapes down, depending whether there is a narrow road up or down to bring the grapes in.
So a mechanical device you can put the grapes in and that moves up and down. like a vernacular.
Exactly. That's the only mechanical support that we can get. But let's say the most is all manual. And but this is also an excellent control of the quality, because then you can make your own perfect selection. And then...
In the vineyard. So less reliance on like a sorting table.
Yeah. And when they get into the cellar, they are already well selected and ready to be transformed. And for example, on this, we've been doing a very good introduction, taking some little basket. And Emanuele was just creating some little backpack in a way, in order to allocate those little baskets. And in this way, as you pick the grapes, you never transfer from one basket to the other. So they arrive exactly in the same way. And this has been a very little detail that has made a huge difference of quality, because really you have no must around. They are just as perfect as they were in the vineyards.
Because if you're not bruising them, then you're not opening them up to oxidation or increased tannins.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would assume that from the taste of the wines that the winemaking would be what you could sum up as traditional. But I wonder if you could kind of walk me through the winemaking and what it is that happens once the grapes reach the winery. What actually is the process?
Yeah. So we just have, we remove, of course, the green part inside. We don't ferment all together. And we just remove these, and then we do ferment in big wood, about those 50 hectoliters. That was actually a dream that we were having of our, together with our father in the past, to be able to ferment in wood. In the past, our father couldn't be doing this because couldn't get this equipment new. And he was at that time fermenting in concrete or in stainless steel. And only after the first year in there, they were going to the botti for aging. Since 2006, we've been able to do this new fermentation in wood. It was something really desirable. And we've been so happy and about this experiment that we decided to go 100% only with the wood fermentation, which is making the wine very natural from the very beginning. So you really get the wood with the fermentation going so natural, with the oxygen going into the fermentation straight away.
Because the oxygen comes through the wood staves.
Yes.
As opposed to an inox stainless steel, no oxygen.
And really it's making the wine very, very natural in this way to me. And if the year it's extremely good, we are going to do up to 40, 50 days maceration in
50,
wood.
50, wow, that's quite high. I mean, you know.
Absolutely, and sometimes we even have the malolactic at the end of it straight away with the skins, which is something unique and something we really were really desired to happen, but it happens and it's just fantastic.
So you don't, do you induce the malo or it just happens?
It just happens. Uh-huh. Because we just try to keep, as well as the fermentation with yeast, we normally just try to keep warm and just start naturally. So we always use natural yeast and natural malolactic acid bacteria that are just, I mean, in Valtellina we were never been lacking the percentage of those. And if the vintage is a little bit softer with the skins, we don't go that far with the maceration. We might do something like 15, 20 days maximum.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe that would be like more for the Rosso or?
The Rosso is doing something like 4 to 6 days maceration only.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. So pretty short. Yeah. And then the Cruz might go up to 50 days, but it could be as short as 20 or so.
Exactly. And then we do normally for the Rosso, as we said, something like 6 to 9 months in wood. For the, let's say, medium reserva, we do something like 2 years in wood. For the major reserva, we do at least 4 years in big wood, mainly chestnut. And after that, normally the wines go back into the stainless steel or concrete, preferable, in order to create an environment like in a huge bottle, in a way, without oxygen. So you have a well idea of what's going on in the bottle next. And in this way, so we leave normally 1 year or 1.5 year and then go into bottles. And as we said, for the Rosso di Valtellina, we do minimum 6 months in bottle aging. For the medium reserva, we do minimum 1 year in bottle. And for the major reserve, we do minimum 3 years in barrel. And that was a huge step that we did recently, because before we were doing something like 2 years also for the major reserve. But we think an extra year can really be something more and more, because it really deserves time. And some people say that as long as stay in botti, should stay in bottle before releasing. So we get very close to that. And we think it's been a huge improvement for us.
How have you seen the wines evolve over the time that you've been involved with the winery? I mean, what has changed since 84?
Yeah, it's we see now with this fermentation in wood that is bringing the wine a little more, in a way even more clean, because you don't get that reduction that much, and maintaining a lot more freshness and a lot more, even stable through aging. Then of course, thinking about the first vintages, you really see how the evolution it's going to be, and of course we've been facing some super vintages, like it was I don't know, like 85 or 1990 something, and it's but you still see the way they can evolve a lot. I mean, you see a lot of future for those vintages as well. And whenever we have a chance to open up one, you can still see the way they can be enjoyable in the next future. So it's really a lot of evolution, and but still maintaining a lot of freshness and things. So I think it's very challenging, all of this. And so it's just
there's a lot to consider.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about your own career at the winery? How did it start? I mean, in what direction did you go, and what do you tend to do day to day now?
Yeah, so I've been joining, 100% my father in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that he allowed me to do some experience outside. So I've been studying food science and technology, and then I did a master in enology, and I've been working a little bit in Piemonte as well. And it was a very interesting and challenging experience, of course, and also working very much close to the markets as well. And then I decided to move back to the family business, because I really thought that I needed to transform, transfer, let's say, all the experience in terms of more getting the Valtellina known in the world. Because I really do believe that Valtellina wines have a lot of potential, as a region, but are still very much unexpressed, just need to be discovered.
And what has been the reception so far in your travels to New York? What's the American audience like at this time?
It's been superb, really. I see that when you have a chance to talk to the people and to express and to tell the way we work and etc., and to explain why some wines can be in a way or another, then people do really understand what's behind a glass. And even most of the time, the wine might speak by themselves, and I think that's the best thing. But of course, if you let them, understand a little bit better what's behind in the vineyard, etc., that's making everything more easy to understand for sure.
What are vintages that you have seen since 01 that really have stood out for you at the winery?
Yeah, well, since 2001, for sure 2001 and 2002 were excellent. And then we went absolutely 2005. That was a super vintage, very little quantity, but excellent quality. In fact, we are going to be releasing only reservas. And then we've also a very good 2007 and 2009. And so, there have been a few of them, but the secret, I think, is try to get the best from every single vintage. And even when you think it's going to be a minor, we are just trying to do our best to deliver the best expression of that vintage. So you have to accept, sometimes it's not easy, but you have to accept that not every single vintage is different. And you just need to try to get the best from the nature that is giving you that vintage. And sometimes, like it was, for example, for 2003, like 2003 was very hot in Valtellina, and we took the strong decision to produce only Rosso di Valtellina. Basically, the Rosso di Valtellina was born that vintage.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and so...
Which is a non-cru blend of yeah. Nebbiolo that you make.
And at that point, this young wine was sort of opening new markets and new segments as well, because, of course, it was much more difficult to sell by the glass, for example, a major reserva, but it was much easier to let people approach a Valtellina wines with a Rosso di Valtellina. So
because the price point's lower
also,
for the
yeah.
Rosso di Valtellina.
And in this way, it happens that, I mean, a bad vintage in a way was taking a positive result because then was getting the wine more easy to understand and more approachable to people. So sometimes you can even turn into positive of something that the nature is giving you. So it's really a matter of trying to understand what you have and give the best result.
And are there movements in terms of farming or vineyard management that really appeal to you, or things that really seem to have influenced how you do work in the vineyard, or no?
Well, I mean, I think it could be interesting to get some other. I mean, we are doing a lot of work in the vineyards also, moving into the. You might have heard of the Simonit and Sirk method. That
no, getting, I'm sorry, I don't know.
It's actually a more rational way of working in terms of pruning, in terms of. And Emanuele is following together with the team. And together with other producer, trying to follow everything a little bit more rational in the vineyards, trying to get the vineyards express its best from the pruning itself that must be done in a proper way, etc. And so we try to make everything a little bit more, let's say rational, I think, in those in working in the vineyards and trying to get the best expression from trying to maintain the plants in the best healthy conditions. And so, I mean, we are always watching and trying to see the new things that we can do in order to improve what we are doing without transforming too much, I mean, from our traditional way. So we try to understand what's going on in terms of equipments and things, but always try never to move that far from where we want to go and to maintain. So maintain the tradition, maintain this way of working in a very much, I don't want to say strict, but in a way, I mean, very clear way of working.
And what would you see as, given that respect for tradition, and what would you see as the future of the Arpepe winery? 10 years from now, if we were to sit down again, what might you be telling me that you've done recently?
Well, I hope to bring Arpepe more around the world and to let people more and more know about Valtellina. I mean, we are not really thinking of growing that much. We might be, as we said, growing a little bit more with few neighbors. I mean, giving us the grapes or giving us the vineyards around in order to become a little bit bigger. But to me, it's more and more to tend to let Valtellina more known in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I hope to be more and more contagious with some other young people who might be able to recover some older vines and older areas and try to, maybe to be into the UNESCO heritage and to be more... presenter around the world, and that will be a great success for us. And and then we are facing more and more tourism ourselves, which is fantastic at the same time, and to see the people coming and discovering Valtellina, and I think It has a high potential even from other point of view. I mean, a lot of other aspects of Valtellina, like the cheese producers, it's something very interesting and to discover. I hope to bring Valtellina a little more closer, like the Lange, to be a little more, you know, gastronomic tour in the area. So to let people discover this this part of the world a little bit more.
And I'm sure you've been around wine your whole life, and there have been numerous bottles open. Is there a particular moment drinking wine that really stands out for you over your career?
Well, there are several of them. And for sure, opening these very old vintages, it's always a mysterious moment and very... as we said, when we were opening the bottle from our fathers from 1942, something like very, very challenging. And at the same time, opening some older bottles in comparison with some old Barolo or some, but even together with some other producer from the area. So in the Lange or in some other area, some old Chianti or so. I always enjoy making comparison of the way the wines behave through time. That's really amazing. Yeah.
Isabella Pellizzetti Perugo, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful to have you.
For me too. See you soon.
Hey gang, you know our little show here today is sponsored by 750, a service for buyers in New York and New Jersey looking to buy wine, spirits, beer at the wholesale level. But we thought we'd get a few more perspectives in on what's so neat about 750. Today, Aaron Von Rock from Lincoln Restaurant.
Thanks, Levy. I think we've discovered we've used 750.com nearly every day now just to keep tabs on some of our favorite wines. After tasting thousands of wines a year, it's great to know where just in the map all the wines fit. And with all the distributors they're now working with, they're working with nearly all of our favorites. So we find tapping into them every day keeps us in touch with the big picture.
A wine buyer testimonial for 750.com. Thanks, Aaron Von Rock.
Cheers.
All Drink to That is recorded with the great assistance of executive producer Matt Ducker, and also with the great help of our guests and listeners. Thank you for joining us. You can catch us online. AllDrinkToThatPod.com, no apostrophe, AllDrinkToThatPod.com, or on Twitter at DrinkToThatPod. And you can find us on iTunes. You should subscribe. Tell us what you think in a review. Subscribe on iTunes. Thank you for listening.